Saskatchewan in Regina. And yes, I bleed green and white for the Riders, as any Saskatchewan boy does. And I've been at West Shore Alliance for 5 years. Before West Shore Alliance, was in Calgary at First Alliance on staff there and worked in a variety of different roles. Loved it there. Our family's in Calgary. But really, just kind of wanted a change. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today in regard to transition. I enjoy family, my dog Tess, I have a three-legged Yorkie. It's a whole story in and of itself. She had four when we got her. I love spending time with my friends, riding motorcycle. Also, I do some writing. I wrote a book called Fight Club, F-I-Y-T, stands for Fuel in Your Tank, and has to do with helping people find energy and purpose. So I finished that book the end of December, and it has thus been published, and have really enjoyed that. Have done some workshops and some book releases and things like that, so I've enjoyed that. Two messages, as Ron was mentioning, about transition. The one today is going to be dealing with mindset, the way we think. And we know the way we think is absolutely critical to the way we live our lives. The second one, we're going to talk about heart set. So mindset today, and then we're going to talk about our heart set. Because it's one thing to know we need to think a certain way, and it's another thing to actually feel something so that we have that emotive strength or emotive push in the right direction. I was thinking about the different transitions that have taken place in my life over a number of years. Some of the largest ones. First one would be marriage. My wife right there, her name is Cheryl. This last week we celebrated 35 years of being married. We met when I was 13, she was 12. We lived half a block apart from each other. Probably never thought we would wind up marrying each other. But that happened, and as a result, we told our daughters they can't date until they're 16. So you can figure that one out. Had a lot of ups and downs through our teenage years, for sure. Another major thing, of course, going into the ministry. Though I've been married 35 years, been in ministry 36 years. I was going to seminary, and during that time, I was employed at a little church just outside of Regina, little Baptist church. And was served there as a youth pastor, and I enjoyed it, loved it. I had no clue what I was doing. People were very kind to me, and isn't it true that many times as churches, when someone comes onto your staff, you know there's a period of time when you're pouring more into their life than they are able to give you. And I hope you realize that when that happens, that's a ministry that you as a church have. Sometimes there's that mentality, this young guy comes, or whoever it may be, sometimes even in regard to a board member, a younger guy comes on the board, and you know that it's going to be a period of time before he gets his footing. And you have a new pastor coming, and you know it's going to be a period of time before he gets his footing and understands all that's going on and where he's headed. And I know certainly... when I started being a pastor, I learned those things, and it's interesting because some of you may know Ray Downey. Ray and Viola Downey had been missionaries many years in Africa, and they're at West Shore. And Ray said, so over the years of ministry that you've had, what is one of the major lessons that you have learned? Just one of them, and of course there's been many. And I said, you know, one of the major lessons I've learned is that... you never know as much as you think you do. And the reality of it is I have more questions about God today than I did back in seminary. In other words, there's so many things that happen in life that I don't get, that I don't understand. And some of you have been in that position when you're working with someone and you're loving on them, and maybe they're diagnosed with cancer, or maybe there's a sudden accident in their life, or whatever the case, and you would love to be able to say, this is what's going on. Have you ever had a desire that you would just love to sit down with Jesus in the flesh and have a cup of coffee with him or whatever and chat and have him explain some of the things in your life that are going on? Or in the people's lives you love. Well, that's not the way it goes, is it? What does Jesus say to us? Probably more than anything else, this is the message he gives to me. He says, Randy, trust me. Trust me. There's going to be a number of things we're going to talk about in regard to transition, and that's going to be one of them. There's going to be times in your life and in your ministry and as your new pastor comes where you're not sure what's going on with Nanaimo Alliance Church. And you're going to hear the Lord say, trust me in this. Rely on me. Depend on me. So marriage, pastoring, parenting. I have two daughters grown up. One's married. One is about to get married the end of December. I have two grandkids, third one along the way. And you know, one of the biggest transitions that happened, I think, in life, one that my friends didn't think I was going to do, and Cheryl, of course, didn't either. As part of my personality is the move out to the island. Things were good at First Alliance. Could have stayed there to my retirement years, I'm sure. Just a really good position, healthy relationships with the staff and with the people. But part of who I am is I like change. I like things to move along. Anybody else like that? You actually like, love, and embrace change. Okay, not many hands. Okay, maybe five. But that's who I am. And so to the island was a way of leaving a lot of things behind. Dropped 25% of my salary by coming out here. Left our daughters and their families in Calgary. All my friends, it was like a brand new start coming out here. Now, we have seen our daughters and our family a lot. They come out here a lot. We fly back there a lot. That's part of our budget, and that's just the way we live. But many of you know that one of the biggest changes that happens is in the whole parenting thing and then moving, sometimes leaving your kids behind or they leave you behind, and that's a change. Came from a large church, First Alliance, when I left, was about 4,000 in people. Came to West Shore, we were about 67 or 68 people. Of course, a different culture, a different mindset out here on the island as well. The pace is different. And here's another thing that I don't know if people who've grown up on the island understand, but I've certainly seen it here coming from a place like Calgary. And it's just something that I get in talking with people, especially in the Victoria area. People spend a lot of time down in the ocean, and I'm sure a lot of you do as well. But when I talk to people, even though they've got a lot of problems and things going on in their life, and I'm talking about people outside of the church. I love getting involved with people who aren't inside of the church. That's one of my passions. And when I talk to people outside of the church, it's not that they don't have problems or struggles or whatever, but there still seems to be, to a large degree, this contentment that people have in the island. And it's hard to talk to people about the Lord if they feel they're already contented. And that's one of the challenges. I'm sure you maybe heard the stats that as far as reaching people for Christ, Quebec and Vancouver Island are two of the last and hardest places to reach in Canada. Because I think on the island, people come here to get away from the mainland. Some people have left bad things behind. Some people have grown up here, may leave for a period of time, but then they come back. There's something about being by the ocean, being on the island, that has left a sense of contentment and no need for anything else. And it doesn't surprise me when I see only about four or five people putting up your hands as far as embracing change. If I would have asked that question in Calgary, over 50% would have put up their hand. Change is just a part of the culture. It's part of the way of life. And it really was a shock for me when I came here to West Shore Alliance Church. Many of you know Jim Gunzel. He planted that church, and he had been there for 10 years, been diagnosed with cancer, and died like within 6 weeks after being diagnosed. He was gone. And all of a sudden, you have this church that he started without their lead guy. And so they went through a year of what's going to happen, where are we going to go? And I remember coming into the church and being from Calgary again, I had all these ideas that we could do to be a part of the culture and our community and to minister and to get outside of the walls of the church. Because I'm a firm believer that the church is most effective when it's outside the walls of the church. I hope you believe that. I hope you realize that. That if this church, if your church is going to grow, maybe one day have to struggle with having two services, it's not going to happen by praying and just hoping people are going to come in the doors here. It means you're going to have to get out, get involved wherever you can, whatever your gifts, whatever your strengths are. And it's funny that I remember reading years ago, a fellow by the name of Joel Aldrich, this does go back years, he wrote a book called Lifestyle Evangelism. And he said, what happens when people become Christians, that within 2 to 3 years, most of their friends, if not all of their friends, are inside the church. I think that's sad. I really think that's sad. I'm thankful for my brothers and sisters in Christ. But I think it's sad when we as Christians really don't have any friends that are outside of the church. I always used to say to the staff that I would have, one of my qualifications in you working here is that you find a hobby, you find something that you are involved in outside of the church. I said that to Josh on staff at our church. He's now leading, and that's another transition we'll talk about later. And he got involved in squash. And he got involved in the squash club in downtown Victoria. And made a lot of friends, and he actually, I remember one guy that came to church and connected. That's beautiful. That's wonderful. I don't know what it is for you, but I hope you find something that you're going to get involved with other people outside of the church. Because if you let the church fill up your schedule, guess what? It will. Some of you have served in a church for so many years, and sometimes it's been 4 or 5 days or nights a week or whatever, and that's your life. And one of the things I would say to you, one of the things I would encourage you to do, is sometimes say no in the context of the local church and get involved in something in your community and begin to know people, understand people. It's interesting because when we send missionaries overseas, one thing that we say is that it's absolutely critical that they understand the culture that they're going into. And it's one thing to teach them about the culture, and it's another thing for them to be there and actually live in the culture. The thing about us is sometimes we have forgotten that we are in a culture that is constantly changing, because the only culture we've come to know is what's in the church. And that is where we need to understand. It is possible to be involved in our culture without being drawn into it. In fact, the more we're involved with our culture, those who don't know the Lord, if anything, it will convince us how badly we need our Savior, and so do other people. We are going to look at a passage and talk about transition. And it's the Sermon on the Mount. And I'm not going to look at all of it, just certain verses. But you want to talk about a transitional time. It was when Jesus came and he began to talk about a new way of thinking when it came to God and living out, for lack of a better phrase, a religious life or a religious existence. I'm going to begin in verses 13 because this is kind of what I was just talking about. Verse 13 and following. And Jesus goes on the hillside. And again, some of us have in mind that he went on this hillside, that he set up his pulpit, that he put on his three-piece suit, and he preached a message. No. Do you know what he did? He went up on the hillside, and he had a whole variety of different people following him. And you know what he did? He sat down. Read the passage. It's interesting when you read it. He actually sat down with them. It was a very casual setting. It wasn't a real formal setting. Sometimes we think about that, because many times when we've heard that, it's been in the context of a church. It was a very informal setting. And he was talking to the people and beginning this whole idea of transition in thinking, in mindset. In verse 13, he says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Years ago, there was a book called Out of the Salt Shaker. Remember that? Out of the Salt Shaker and Into the World. And the salt shaker many times is representative of the church. And if we're going to have effect, again, that idea, we need to get out of the salt shaker. We need to get to know people. We need to share the love and the message of Christ. I love the picture that is often given, how the sharing of the gospel is like a song. And you know, if you have the radio on or you're listening, you know, online to some music or whatever it is, if you like the tune, then what? You'll pay attention to the words. Now, if you don't like the tune, you're going to turn away right away. Some of you are into different kinds. Some of you like country. Some of you are like classic rock, whatever. But when you like the tune, you'll listen to the words. And how I've heard it put is that our life, the way we live, the way we care for and love people, that's the music. And if people see that we actually love them and care for them, and that we follow up with them, follow-up's a big thing with people. Not just how are you, but when we find out that down the road we find out how the doctor's appointment went, how that relationship went with their child or whatever it is, we follow up. When they see that we actually care for them, the music, guess what? Then they just might listen to the words. But we want them to listen to the words without the music. And the music is a part of it. In fact, I think it's the precursor. And Jesus says we're the salt of the earth. We're to be the light of the world. And so far, I think his listeners are shaking their heads. Okay, this is good news. This is a calling. This is exciting. Then he continues on. Don't think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly, I will tell you, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen, will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Therefore, anyone who sets aside one of the least of these commands and teaches others accordingly will be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Okay, again, they're hearing now Jesus saying that he's the fulfillment of all the laws and the prophets. They're not exactly wrapping their mind around it, but they're hearing it. But then I'm sure their attention is gained when Jesus says this. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Boom. Huge transition moment in their thinking. Why? Because they looked up to the Pharisees. They looked up to the teachers of the law. In fact, if they would think if they don't have it together, then what hope is there for them? And here's Jesus sitting on a hillside with them, and he says that your righteousness needs to go beyond them and what they're practicing. Now remember what Jesus said about the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. They were doing everything that they did so everybody could see it. They were all right as far as their actions, but inside they weren't all right. What do you call them? A powerful statement. They were like what? Whitewashed tombs filled with dead men's bones. That's what Jesus said to the Pharisees. Talk about blowing them away. Talk about blowing the mindset of the day away. Everything looks all right on the outside. Inside, dead. And so Jesus said, if you think you're going to go to heaven and be a part of God's kingdom living that way, you're wrong. Then he continues on with some things that are totally changing their way of thinking, transition. You've heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, he who says to a brother or sister or anyone else the word raka is answerable to the court. Now, raka, the actual translation is empty-headed. And I'm thinking, well, we don't usually use that term. But you know a term that we use that I think is somewhat equal with that? Loser. Loser. That's my least favorite word. I hate when somebody uses that word, loser. And I think of many times in my life when I myself have used it. In fact, I remember preaching this, and this was at Rocky View before I went to First, and we were going through a boom time, and we had all our teens and our young people in the center of the church, and they filled the front rows. It was one of the most exciting times in my ministry. It was just an awesome time. And I was talking about this, how I hate when people use the word loser. And I never try to use it myself. Now, my kids at this time, they were in teens. They had many other friends were at church. And I remember that night there was something at the church, and I'm driving my daughters home, and some of their friends are in the vehicle as well. And as they're driving, somebody cuts me off, and I go, "Loser." And as soon as I said it, I thought, "Hypocrite." Right? And isn't that true? How we struggle sometimes. We know these things. But all of a sudden, out it came, and I thought, oh, I just used the word I hate. And so Jesus is saying, you know, it's not just a matter of murder. It's not just a matter of the fulfillment of the law. How much can I get away with? But he says, you shouldn't even use that kind of language towards other people. He says, "You fool." Or anybody who says you fool will be in danger of the fire of hell. Wow, okay. He's got some people's attention now. They're starting to say, this guy who's healing, do miracles, and people are following him, he sure does have some strange teaching. Because now he's talking about things they've never heard before. And then he says this, get this. I love this passage because it changes the way I think we think, even in the evangelical church. "Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar there, remember your brother or sister, and remember that they have something against you. Leave your gift in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift." Okay, now, as I was growing up in the evangelical church, and in my high school years, I would go occasionally with my parents. I didn't have any friends in the church. All my friends were associated with sports or music. They were all outside of the church. And I always remembered this one thing that when we came to communion, Lord's Supper, that the pastor would say, "Now, if you have something against you or a brother or sister, don't partake. Go make things right with them and then partake." And I thought, okay. And then I'd read this and something started not to make sense. Because do you know what's this is more talking about than it is communion? It's talking about offering. It's talking about our gift. Even when we put our offering, our money in the offering plate, I believe this passage is saying, if you want to make that presentable before God, go get your heart clean with whoever else. Let it sit by the side. Go talk to that person. See, when I go to Lord's Supper, I go there for one reason: mercy. In fact, the one thing I know when I go to the Lord's table is that I can't do it on my own. I go to celebrate God's mercy, his kindness, and that life-changing moment when I accepted Christ into my life. But this passage is talking about before I put whatever I put in the offering plate. We don't hear that a lot because sometimes as pastors or the boards, we need money to operate the church, and I'm sure you've heard that message as any, you know, church has. But he's really saying, Jesus is saying, get your heart right with God. Then your gift will be acceptable. And I want to say that to you today. Boy, there's a beautiful thing in coming in and not knowing a church. It really is. But if you've got something between you and somebody else, get it right before your new pastor comes. He doesn't need to come and deal with that. His whole life is going to be turned upside down. He's got to get things set up with his family. He's going to, as I said, he's coming from Slave Lake, right, Alberta? Slave Lake, Alberta, and Nanaimo, like going to two different worlds. I promise you that. He's going to have a lot of major changes going on in his life. And he's not going to need to deal with things that maybe you have against one another. That doesn't mean he may not come here and everything just looks fine. I'm talking about stuff that maybe has existed for years. Maybe it's time that some of you need to quit crossing your arms and say, I need to go to that person. I need to drop my pride. I need to let it go. And I just need to say, brother, sister, we may not see eye to eye, but we need to put these things at the foot of the cross, and we need to move on. It's that simple. Let me say something. If you don't, it will affect this entire church. In fact, remember when Joshua was having great success? And all of a sudden they went to a battle and they lost. Remember why they lost? Because of one man named Achan who decided he was going to disobey God and not do what God wanted him to do. And I just want to say, some of you have been part of this church for maybe years, maybe not years, maybe a short period of time. But already, there's some resentment in your heart towards somebody. Go and talk to them. Maybe you need to shed some tears. Maybe you need to say those words that are really hard for you to say. I'm sorry. Or here's a bigger one. I was wrong. Because right away we get defensive. But I wasn't wrong, and they were wrong too. And they were more wrong than me. Forget what their choice is. Honor your choice before God. That's the most important thing. And if they reject your offer and your reconciliation, the scripture says, then continue to work it out, maybe with some people you trust, some brothers and sisters in Christ you trust. But at the end of the day, do everything you can. And then, if they still reject it, at some point, you have to let it go. You just have to. You know, the thing is when I'm bitter towards something else, and there's been times in my life when I've gotten bitter towards someone else, usually they could care less, but it eats me alive. Have you ever gone through that? You've been upset with someone, and you lose sleep, and every time you have a conversation, their name comes up, and you're this, that, whatever. But they're just going on like anything. Life's fine with them. It's not doing them any harm, but it's eating you up. It's destroying your spiritual life. It's destroying your relationship with your spouse and with your family. Because all you can do is think about that. You need to let it go, putting it at the foot of the cross. Jesus goes on to so many different things here. And he talks in regard to adultery, and he says it's not just the act of adultery, it's the lusting after another woman. He talks about hatred. And this one I think is good because, again, knowing in my own life, it can be a major challenge. You've heard it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil one and the good, and he sends his rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. You see, what Jesus is saying is that often we measure ourselves by what other people do. And he's saying, you can't do that. That's not the standard. He says, the standard is what I'm asking you to do. So when it comes to enemies, and we all have enemies, maybe it's in the workplace, maybe it's in your neighborhood, maybe some of you are ticked off with a neighbor right now, maybe it's in the context of your family, maybe there's been a long battle going on there, whatever it is, you may see them as your enemy. And Jesus says, you know what? If you want to be different than anyone else and be the salt of the earth and the light of the world, you need to love your enemy. You need to pray for them. You need to ask God to change your heart. You need to get over yourself. I don't know how many times the Lord said that to me. Randy, just get over yourself. You're not as important as you think you are. But you know what's important, says Jesus? My word, my truth, my way of living, being the salt of the world, or salt of the earth and the light of the world. You want to change things in the world? Love people who don't like you. Because as he said, anybody likes people who likes them back. That's nothing special. Who doesn't do that? You want to be different? Love people who don't like you. And allow God to work in your heart. And here's what I find when I finally get over some of those obstacles, and I love the people that maybe don't like me, and you know, there's things in between us. Here's what I find out. That often what I thought was their issue, it was not their issue at all. That there's something else much deeper going on in their life. And when I get over myself and I'm able to put this behind me, then I am free to be with them. And sometimes, all of a sudden, as we talk and as we work through some things, I find out there's some other deeper things going on in their life. You know it, and I know it, that if I'm having, some of you have grown-up kids. When your grown-up kids aren't doing well, you know how it affects you in every other part of your life. It just does. And it's so nice to be able to talk to someone who understands that. And next week I'm going to talk about some of the things that we had to go through, and I wouldn't change them for the world, but they were not fun to go through. But in the same way, it's part of learning how to love in ways that you never thought you could love. Let me just say this. This isn't in my notes or my thoughts, but if some of you are really struggling, you've kind of alienated your kids or whatever, stop it. Just stop it. Love them anyway. Throw open your arms. Let them know they're always welcome with you, no matter what they've done, no matter what they're going through. Let them know that they're always going to be safe with you. Because if they don't feel that way, they're going to find other places where they think they're safe, and they're probably not. And be patient. It's going to take time. Just need to let things go sometimes. But my grudge is down. I need to unfold my arms. I need to put my arms out to people and to be a person of prayer. So Jesus begins to talk about how transformation is not just a religious duty, or rather religious life is not just a duty, but it's a transformation of the heart. And that's where we're going to transition to next week. But here's some of the things that I just want to say in conclusion. Here's some of the common pieces. When I think about those who were listening to Jesus and knowing that transition was taking place, and how even you as a church are in a place of transition. First of all, when your new pastor comes and he's getting settled and he begins to speak and God speaks to him and is giving him a vision, that'll take time. There may be things that we don't like to hear in what he's saying. But we will do ourselves good to consider what he's saying. Just like those, when Jesus was talking, some of them said, oh, I don't want to hear that. What do you mean I need to love my enemies? You know, I'm a good man, or I'm a good woman. I haven't done these wrong things. Jesus says it's an issue of the heart. I don't like to hear that, but I need to consider it. When your new pastor comes, he's going to say things that some of you are going to struggle with. Some of you, there's so many different reactions when this happens. Some of you are maybe living with an anticipation. Let's go. Let's get the new guy here, and let's go. Let's move forward. Some of you are kind of, what's he going to want to change now? Some of you are having those kinds of fears. What if he changes this in our service? Or what if he says that? Or what, you know? Because every pastor comes in with a mindset of the way he is, and then the way things God is going to say to him, or things God is going to speak to him about. Some of us have our arms crossed and with a "we'll see" attitude. But you know, the right position is our hands folded in prayer, saying, Lord, bless our new guy and his family, and help me to be there for them, to do anything I can to bless them, encourage them, spoil them. If you want to keep this pastor, spoil him like crazy. I'm going to talk about that more next week. I can't tell you how much, as a pastor, it means when, as a church, you do something to bless them. When I started at West Shore in the first year or two, they sent us to Tofino, and they sent us to Point No Point for little breaks for Cheryl and I. I cannot tell you. That was just them spoiling us. I can't tell you how much that meant to us and made us want to do all the more to bless these people, to serve these people. Because there's going to be times in any pastor's life when you want to quit. And in fact, usually Mondays. And often when you're going through a rough time, it's every week. And you just don't know what to do. And something like that, when you as a church choose to bless your staff and your pastors, it'll do more for them than you can possibly imagine. So be in prayer. Uncross the arms. Don't worry about the change. Many times you're going to have to consider, if they hear something and you just, I don't want them to change that, kind of go, but maybe the Lord wants it to change. Realize church culture is only church culture. Every church has its culture. Learn to differentiate between what's culture and what's Christ's way of life. This is just the huddle. This is just a way of getting together and of worshiping and serving. And I'm so excited to see the kids out in this little girl dance and love that. I mean, that's beautiful. That's wonderful. But at the end of the day, it's not about what happens here, right? Like I said, the church really is the church when it's outside these walls, when you're in your workplace, when you're in your neighborhood, when you're with your family, when you're with your kids who are struggling with their faith. That's when the church is the church. And I hope you realize that. I hope you're ready to bless your staff, not only your new guy, but your current staff as well. I cannot tell you. I'm going to talk more about that next week because that's a big thing with me. And I would not be in the ministry for 36 years if it wasn't for churches choosing to bless us at very, very important times. One other thing that I would say is to be all in. There may be times when you may be thinking, I just want to go to another church. Have you ever thought about that? I'm not sure I like what's going on here. I just want to go to another church. I don't like the politics. We're all there. Pastors are there. You're there. Elders are there. Whatever. And I'm not saying there may not be times when the Lord directly changes us from one place to another. But let me say this. If God wants us to change churches, be on the lookout for a burning bush, not just a discontented feeling in your heart. Do you know what I mean? Right? God probably wants you here for a reason, unless he puts a burning bush in front of you and says, you're out. I want you to go somewhere else. And it's absolutely clear. And if he does that, the thing is that you're probably going to be in good relationships here so that you will feel blessed as you leave. But if you're here, be all in. Give of your finances, give of your heart. Learn as the people listening to Jesus had to do. There was a time of learning. And what happened? Some of the crowd left him. They quit. They said, this teaching's too hard. I can't do this. I'm out of here. But there are others who stayed with him. Even through the times when they heard the things they didn't like to hear, and when Jesus said that if you want to find your life, you're going to have to lose it, all these things that they're questioning, and yet they stuck with Jesus because they knew his way was best. Here's a question that I have for you. Do you believe God has great things in store for Nanaimo Alliance Church? Do you believe that? Do you really believe God has great things for the future of this church? I believe that most of you wouldn't be here this morning if you didn't believe that. But know this, if he has great things in store for this church, he is going to ignite you by his Holy Spirit. There's going to be a brand new sense of unity here, of energy, and of purpose. It may not be too long before you're looking at two services. And all of a sudden you're going, then your problems are, oh, how are we going to keep two groups of people connected? That's kind of a fun, I've been through that transition, that's kind of fun. And actually it's a lot simpler than you think. And what if those two services, one of them was actually going to be on a Sunday night? Not like the old school Sunday night services, but actually a service that was totally different. Who knows? Who knows where God's going to lead you? All I want to say to you as I leave this morning, and I do look forward to next week because it's kind of two things going together, is that be all in. Don't sit back. Don't do this. We'll see. We'll see. Uncross your hands, arms. Go like this and say, Lord, I believe you have great things in store for Nanaimo Alliance Church. Bless our staff, bless our board, create unity and harmony. And may I do everything that I can with whatever talents and gifts you have given me and resources. And may I be all in so that truly we can become who you want us to be, that we will be the salt of the earth, the light of the world, and that we will see baptisms, that we will see people coming to know Christ and being discipled, that we will see things in this church that we've never seen before. Lord, don't let me get in the way. And if there's somebody I need to talk to and go and make things right, help me to do that. Help me to understand that following you just doesn't mean having a religious presence or pretending I've got everything's okay on the outside, but help me to realize that until the day I die, you will always be transforming me from the inside out. Be ready, my friends, for when your pastor comes. Be ready so that when he comes, he'll see that you're already well on the way. May God's peace be yours, and I look forward to being with you next week. God bless you.